grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about henna, henna, henna. Aiko, aiko, ande. Giacomo Fino, anane. Giacomo Finane.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Ooh, girl.
Ooh, girl.
Let me tell you, it's a magical episode.
Okay, listen, Matt. Why do you say it's magical?
Well, we might just be diving into the wizarding world.
Of Harry Potter?
Of Harry Potter. Ooh. And honestly, I don't think that we could have had a better guest for this topic.
She has earned her spot here, I
think. She's truly clawed her way.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, no, no. I'm saying there's no one that compares. Like, this person has been in the Harry Potter trenches.
Yes.
And you know what? She was one of the hosts of PotterCon just this weekend.
During the sorting ceremony.
During the sorting ceremony, which is, that's amazing.
That's what an honor.
You get to oversee everyone's future begin.
That's the headlining act.
Absolutely. I mean, other credits. The headlining act is, everyone waits for the sorting. When you go to Harry Potter World, Wizarding World, that's my one qualm with Universal Studios Wizarding World is you don't get sorted.
You get sorted. Yeah, that's bullshit.
There's no imitation sorting.
You just choose of your own self-image what house you're in, which is flawed.
You go into a goddamn shop and buy whatever scarf.
Right. And then there is like the wand, like the Ollivander's like wand ceremony, but it's bullshit.
We're going to get into all of it.
Okay, well, let's go through the credits.
Let's go through the credits.
She hosts one of my favorite podcasts. Many. Yes, she hosts one of my favorite podcasts, Important Shit That Doesn't Matter, with our friend Ian Adams.
Yes. Don't say my friend.
I corrected
our friend.
Myself,
I also
honey.
Befriend
okay,
Ian.
Okay, girl.
Okay. She's the host of Cool Show Not Lame with my friend Pat Wise.
Our friend Pat Wise.
You know what? He's both of our friends. He's mostly Elisa's friend. What else we got? UCB Lloyd Knight.
UCB Lloyd Knight. She hosts a storytelling show with Katie Ruth Ashcraft. My friend, your friend, our friend.
Our friend, our joint friend, but also, again, primarily Elisa's friend.
Primarily Elisa's friend at Silly City Reliquary.
Absolutely love. And also, one of my favorite shows I think I've ever done in New York City is the roast of your 15-year-old self.
Yes.
Which has been at The Annoyance. It's been at Legion Bar, right? Mm-hmm. So it's been all over, and we're so excited. It's Elise Morales!
Hey!
Oh,
I'm
goodness.
So excited. I was like, should I not talk? Should I talk? What
no
should
one
I
cares.
Do?
Who cares?
You know,
cares?
I just don't want to ruin the magic intro.
You know what? Not everyone has podcast etiquette. But you know who's been around the podcast mm-hmm. block is Elise Morales.
Is Elise Morales.
She hosts her own. So now we know, next time, if you are trying to go on Elisa's podcast and talk to her in the intro, you shut your mouth. Okay, don't you ruin the magic. I giggled too.
A little giggle. Yeah. No, like,
when I was on Elisa's, I giggled. Yeah.
Our intro is very short.
Yes.
Our intro is very short.
Yes,
we just
dive
right in.
How did you guys start the Important That Doesn't Matter podcast? Like, where did it come from?
So Ian, good friend, all our friend. Friend to all.
Friend to all.
Ian Adams. Moved into my basement and he was like super nice. We started hitting it off. He was just like a Craigslist roommate. And then.
Oh, that's so funny. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was just a Craigslist, just some dude from Georgia who was coming up.
I love it.
And he moved in and then he was like, hey, by the way, I have like all of this podcasting equipment if you ever want to start a podcast. And I'd have this idea that I wanted to do a podcast called Important Shit That Doesn't Matter, where we talked about just like the internet mm-hmm. and life online, because I feel like it's this thing that people like always dismiss as silly, but also like we're all living our lives there and we're all like
for sure.
making actually extremely important moves on there all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we started it. And that was that. I had my little sister send me a voice memo of her singing the intro.
Yes,
and then that's
like song. Lovely mm-hmm. theme song.
Yes.
I think I know all the words. I won't attempt to sing it right now.
I would attempt to sing it. The internet's a place for friends, for enemies and almost friends, for people that you wanna fuck and people you've already fucked. So we're here to make the most of all the bits and jokes you post. Gather around, kids, there'll be tears and laughter. It's important shit that doesn't matter. hosted by Ian and Elise. Oh,
yay.
So you should check it out. And also, Bone and I have both been on it. And
that's
did you get a little saucy and political in yours? Because I got a little saucy and political in mine.
I think I got saucy and political in mine.
Well, you had a question come in that someone tweeted to the podcast that they wanted us to talk about the gay internet.
The gay internet.
Gay Twitter specifically, which I feel like I'm not totally entrenched in.
Yeah.
In the way that this question poser might have thought I was, but it was interesting episode.
What did he think the gay Twitter was?
He didn't really specify. Right. He just wanted us to tell him, I think.
What it was?
I'll tell you what the gay internet is. It's gay porn. That's what that is. Exactly. We can talk about that all the doodah day.
Everything centers around beautiful men. That's all it is.
You guys see the flag bearer from Tonga?
Yes,
he's my cover photo now, so I'm sure everyone has seen.
I mean, also, whatever was going on last night with the divers, I mean, really, it was just us screaming at the screen, come on.
Matt Sudi and I were just foaming at the mouth.
It's a lot. But Tonga really put themselves on the map in an enormous way. They were like, our country has a lot to offer.
We're going to oil this guy up?
Yeah. We have the most oil than country.
We have a lot of oil to spare. Yeah. We should just dip our citizens.
The Middle East thinks its power in oil. No, that's us.
Tonga.
Wow, it's Tonga.
We need to be going to Tonga.
What a statement.
Honestly, incredible. Also, when Giselle stomped the runway.
Yes.
She stomped the runway all the way across that big ass field.
I wonder if they were just like, okay, we have a full 3.5 minutes. So we just need to fill with something.
Yes. Let's get Giselle.
Girl from Ipanema.
Yeah.
Yes. Just add something vaguely Brazilian.
It was so stupid. Also, I had heard a rumor that this was it was early in the plans and apparently it was nixed, but that she was going to walk the runway and at the end she was going to get mugged.
What?
This is something that I heard was that she was going to get mugged at the end of the runway and a staged mugging so that they could shine a light on the fact that there's so much crime in Brazil.
What?
Now, and this makes me feel it must have been partially true at some point because she
this can't be true.
Someone didn't just make up that Giselle was going to walk the runway. Like she did.
Yeah.
And they said they wanted to, in the opening ceremony, show the good and the bad of Rio, of Brazil. They wanted to show it in all of its colors.
I bet they nixed it after, the bad just took over, the entire press cycle before the Olympics.
Why would you draw attention to that?
I don't know, but that's what they were saying. And I was like, there's no way that can happen.
That's
and then, of
insane.
Course, it didn't. But, apparently it was supposed to be this she would get mugged and they would chase the mugger around the stadium and it would become a...
Now I'm on board now.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It's she gets mugged. Oh no! Imagine Giselle's acting in that moment. I wish they had done it.
I wish they had done it now.
I loved Little Samba Boy also.
Yes, he was incredible.
Little Samba Boy. Would love to see him come back.
He was doing samba. He was doing capoeira. He was doing all of it.
He's a very talented little boy.
Oh, yes. Lots of talent.
And speaking of a talented little boy.
that was the segue.
Perfect segue.
So guys, we are here today to talk about Harry Potter. And the reason, and there's been, all of a sudden, all this activity around Harry Potter. And
Joe needs money.
Joe
needs
apparently
needs
the money. So it's all begun. I feel like this Harry Potter renaissance that's happened is, the books ended and then we had our theme parks happen in Orlando and it was an international phenomenon.
And Pottermore.
And Pottermore, the website. And now we have Harry Potter also in Universal Studios in Hollywood. There's one in Japan. It's now I think younger and younger kids are getting really exposed to the brand of Harry Potter.
Yes.
And therefore there is this demand for new content. And so we have Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which we all have some opinions on.
Yes, but before we get into those, let's just do with Elise what we normally do with our guests.
Yes.
But let's relate this back to Harry Potter. We always ask our guests what culture has shaped them, but this might be a great opportunity to talk about how Harry Potter shaped each of us.
Yes.
Growing up.
So, Elise, first of all, one of the touchstones of roaster 15-year-old self are the old pictures of Elise.
Yes.
Which are Elise's
fantastic
MySpace presence back in the day. So talk about how Elise became Elise, which is the perfect way I love to phrase that question.
Okay. Fantastic. So as far as I'll talk about my Harry Potter development and my MySpace. So
I love it.
Super concurrent.
They're abreast of each other.
They are. They are. So right around the same time that I was like learning code to make my MySpace.
Oh, wow.
You coded your MySpace?
I coded my MySpace. So it all started with my very first love. I'll say his full name, Brian Chimay. Great name.
Oh, that sounds like a really hot kid.
He was like a little bit nerdy. We went to Hot Topic together. I bought him a studded belt and he really blossomed.
So it was a thing between the two of you.
Yes.
Okay,
cool.
So he knew code. He like could do computer stuff. And so he taught me a little bit. And then I kind of learned how to like, you know those websites that would make you like a template for your MySpace? Uh-huh. I learned how to go in and like further adjust those. Like I couldn't bare write it, but I knew what to look for to like change things. So I would make myself these, like, I remember the MySpace page that I loved the most had a very, very thick black border. So the actual screen was very small. And
yes, I remember those. Okay.
And it had a little black and white robot in the corner that like moved with the page. And the bio said, if you want to know me, fucking know me. And then
you got to throw it down. You got to grab their attention.
Yes.
And I overrode the top eight and I had a top three that was represented by three Pokemon. And you could click on one of them that I thought represented the friend that it would click through to their MySpace. Yes. So I like made it more bitchy, more exclusive.
Oh, more codified.
Yes.
I love it.
So during that same time, I was also getting very into Harry Potter fan fiction, which like I was always a big fan of like the Harry Potter fan sites, MuggleNet. Mm-hmm. There was one, I think there was Leaky Cauldron.
I remember.
Leaky Cauldron as well. And there might have been one called like Portkey or something, but it wasn't as good. MuggleNet, Leaky Cauldron.
Oh, there should have been one called Portkey.
That's a great
name. Yeah. So I think so. I think there was. But either way, like I started with those and then I started to get into the world of fan fiction. Mm-hmm. And primarily on fanfiction.net. That was my main.
Were you also?
I was. So fanfiction.net had a sister site called, oh gosh, I forgot what it was, but where it was like the home for like original stories. And I tried my hand at writing some horrifically intolerable stories about. I was inspired by the movie Alfie, the remake with Jude Law.
And Oh my God.
I wrote a whole story about this British womanizer who worked at a news station in New York
Gotta
City.
Gotta flip the gender. You're ahead of your time.
Yeah. No. Well, he was male. He was a male.
No,
womanizer.
I know.
Yeah.
And you wrote about a British womanizer. Okay,
womanizer.
Sorry.
Lothario, male womanizer. But anyway, fanfiction.net.
Yes. So I also wrote original stories on Fiction Press.
That's what it was. Fiction Press.
Fiction Press.
Yes. Thank you.
So Fiction Press, I wrote original stories, but fanfiction was where I really shone. I had a real knack for taking the Harry Potter characters and putting them in new scenarios, mainly with myself.
and was it romantic? Was it saucy?
Yes.
It was sexy.
So it was romantic, but not sexy. In fan fiction terms, if you guys want a little terminology,
yes, please.
Sex scenes are called lemons, and I did not write any lemons because like you go like woo,
yeah,
like when you suck on a lemon, you're like. Ooh. So I did not write any lemons because I was writing all of this fan fiction exclusively on my home computer and I was very scared.
Oh my God.
Keeping it local. That's good. That's
smart. My dad would be like, you know, that my dad would one, find and then read this fan fiction. Ooh.
So it wasn't that you didn't have the urge to write the lemons.
I read a lot of lemons and I would be like, oh my God. But I couldn't bring myself to write them. Also, it's like write what you know, and I wasn't really having a lot of sex at that time.
Right, so you couldn't really delve into
that
world.
But it's good that you knew that.
My primary fan fiction time was when Order of the Phoenix had already come out, but we were waiting for
Half-Blood Prince. Okay.
And 2003, so 2004.
And during that time, I wrote a very extensive 39 chapter, 650,000 word fan fiction.
Oh my gosh. You wrote a book.
Essentially. That was literally just the fifth book. I would sit at my parents' computer and go chapter for chapter everything that happened, but it was as if I
chose the longest book.
That's so funny. So basically,
like,
you had there's a version of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix with you.
Gotcha.
It's you. So it's Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Elise.
To be fair, though, that book is the most...
My name was Addie in it.
Addie. Okay,
so, all right, so I have a question. What was Addie good at? Like, what
everything.
Oh, my God.
Everything. That was the main complaint. When people would... So I got a lot of good reviews, but when people would flame me, they would always say... They would be like... This character is a Mary Sue, and like, fuck you. And I would be like, oh, I'm 14. Stop.
This character's a Mary Sue.
Yes. Which means she's like too perfect. Sure. And I was like, that's just how I would be if I got to go.
You're saying you hate me. So wait, did you graduate high school in 08?
Yes.
Okay, so you were you're the same age as us.
As
so
all of us, yeah.
I feel that year especially legit grew up with Harry Potter.
Yes.
Because Sorcerer's Stone, I was 11.
Yes, exactly. I think that like our age group, it just like timed out really well. Like I read Sorcerer's Stone at 11, and then I think 2 and 3 were already out.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
they were.
14 or 4, we were maybe a little bit younger than him, but by 5, by the time 5 came out, we had caught up with
him. And then Deathly Hallows came out right the summer of our junior year.
When we were 17.
When they were 17 and going to graduate. I remember always being like, right there with the characters. Like,
and
I
we're the same age
understood.
As Rupert and Emma
right.
and Daniel.
Yes. They're actually.
Yeah. That was huge.
So, and that being my personal problem with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, I think, outside of the fact that I don't think it's written very well, is like, all of a sudden, they're like 50 years old. And also, I really feel like they're watered down, boring, one-dimensional versions of themselves.
Feel my biggest issue with Cursed Child. I've been saying cursed, not cursed. I don't know if that's correct.
It's definitely all of us trying to be a little British.
Yeah.
It's like never in your life had you ever said cursed until Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Did you guys... How was your first pronunciation of Hermione? Because I said Hermione until she has Victor Crumb
learn
how to say it in the fourth book, which I think was in there because they were like, none of the Americans know what this name is.
I think that might have been true because I remember when that moment came in the books, because I knew it was Hermione because my fourth grade teacher that read us the book in class was pronouncing it like Hermione. Mm. Shout out to Mr. Dumagar, who always did the Hagrid voice and no other voices.
Wow.
He always did a Hagrid voice, which ended up being the literal Hagrid voice. Like, he nailed this voice, and he attempted to do no other characterization.
That was his showcase of Hagrid.
That was his showcase. And he went on to get signed by WME.
Wow.
Wow.
And so he, sorry. So basically, once I found out that it was Hermione,
blew your world.
I was like, how the fuck could there be that many syllables in this name? It's, like, I don't accept it.
There was a girl. I mean, I remember that there was this girl named Ariana. Her name was actually Ariana Grande, which is very close.
Too close.
Well, you know who she was. It was Ariana Grande.
She was Ariana Grande. In my fourth grade class. And she was listening to the books on tape, and she told me that it was Hermione, and I dismissed her out of hand. That's absurd.
Speaking of the audiobook and pronunciation, so originally, and J.K. Rowling abides by this, it's pronounced Voldemort, silent T.
What?
And then the guy who read the audiobooks pronounced it Voldemort up until the fifth book after the movies had come out, and after the characters in the movie pronounced it Voldemort, he had to correct his own pronunciation. And so
never said Voldemort.
No, me neither.
I always said Voldemort. I don't understand Voldemort. I don't get, like, is it supposed to be French?
It's supposed to be French.
That's another problem that I have with Cursed Child.
What?
Is that they, like, we have to, I don't know if we have to go in the plot, but the point where they're traveling and they're in the Voldemort world, everyone's saying his name. And I'm like, they wouldn't be saying his name. They would all be saying the Dark Lord.
Oh,
this is
There is a lot.
So right.
There is a lot dropped.
Also, the book implies that Harry went to Godric's Hollow once with Petunia, but that's not true.
No.
Harry had never heard of Godric's Hollow until the seventh book, until that book came out.
Yeah. I think it's just very obvious. Like, there's a lot missing. Not only is there a lot of logic drops, but also the humor is totally missing.
Mm-hmm.
The humor of the books, and Henry brought this up because Henry Kapersky, my boyfriend, read this prior, and I'm about halfway through.
Yeah.
But Henry has read it and absolutely hated it, and he's a huge fan. Mm-hmm. And his biggest problem is just, like, for sheer enjoyment value, like, humor is gone.
Yeah.
It's just not
it's
funny.
It's trying very, very hard. They're trying really hard to have Scorpius
Be
Malfoy
the
play
relief.
The Ron role, but he has none of Ron's charm. It's just not there. And I think it's because the characters are too fast, and you can tell... Whatever spark she has, and I think the strongest part of Harry Potter are the characters. It's
it's absolutely
the best, most fun part. You get to know them. All of them seem off. None of them seem correct in Cursed Child. And like, there are parts of the plot that I think are fun, but it's like hyper accelerated.
Yeah.
And the characters are all wrong.
Yeah.
Like Ron's like, it, like the joke shop guy now, which I know he runs Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. Like, I know that that's like canon.
But his personality is so different.
Yeah, and Hermione.
She's boring.
Yeah.
She's boring. She's nothing. She's, spoiler alert, she's the Minister of Magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
But the thing is, her character is gone. There is a way, there has to be a way to make what's so fun and funny and interesting and amazing about Hermione and like age that to where she is now, but there's no humor in her character. All the scenes that I've read so far between Hermione and Harry are so paint dry.
Yeah.
And Harry is just like, I don't know. Like it's and of course Ginny's whole role in the book is what's happening, babe?
Yeah.
What's going on, sweetheart?
Harry, you need to be a better father. Harry, like I'm just a mom now.
Like I'm the wife.
and like, so another thing is that Albus Severus, Harry's son, who shouldn't have named that.
No, absolutely.
Can we talk
not.
About the names for 1 second? Yeah. Horrible.
Horrible. Horrible. Very bad.
Literally bad.
Bad names.
Very, very bad. Scorpius, terrible. Albus
Rose.
Severus. Delphi.
Delphi. And Rose and Hugo are very... Hugo's not even in it, but Hugo's their other child.
Hugo's a solid name. I would have rather followed a Hugo Potter.
Yeah.
Absolutely love the name Hugo. Hugo for this. I love Hugo. Why the fuck is her name Rose?
Yeah, it's very
That is so stupid.
And then like... it's...
Is she 80 years old? Her name's... What?
Rose, like, Granger Weasley.
Rose Granger Weasley, which I do think it's badass. That
yeah,
it's
I do
yeah,
that like
is
that
nice.
It's Granger Weasley.
She's like, I'm a Granger Weasley. And I'm like, yes, you are, bitch. Yeah, yes, you are.
I do love that.
I love it.
So Albus Severus goes into Slytherin. That's the big thing.
Yep.
But they never show anything throughout the rest of the book to show why he's in Slytherin.
Mm.
Like they have, but like it would be cool to see that he's like ambitious or whatever it is. Like maybe he, like they tried it that he's like brooding, he's like sad.
Yeah.
But Slytherin's thing is that they're ambitious. So show him being ambitious. And that's why it doesn't make any sense, because all he is in this thing is kind of exactly the same as Harry. He's like super brave. Like it just doesn't make any
totally. I feel like that's probably a device just to get him and Scorpius to.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like you have such a cool opportunity to have him kind of maybe struggle with being a shittier person. Being a Slytherin, you know? Like,
at the end of the day, why is he in Slytherin? Because they needed him to be in Slytherin for the fucking book.
Yeah.
They did no work in the early pages of the text, which you absolutely can accomplish. You show one tiny thing about his character, and then later on we believe that he's in Slytherin. All we see is him being nervous and terrified that he's going to be put in Slytherin, and then he gets put in Slytherin. And honestly, it just depresses me, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point in the book now where I don't really want to give too many spoilers, but they're about to do something that is going to alter the course of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's going to ruin a lot of things.
Have you... spread the scene with the trolley witch. Yeah.
Okay. I have so many problems.
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I'm going to get to the trolley witch later.
No, but spoil it for me, because I read the whole synopsis and I was like, what?
Yeah.
So we have a segment later in the show called I Don't Think So, Honey.
Okay.
And I Don't Think So, Honey, my mind is going to be focused on
the trolley witch. Okay, because I agree.
Can we talk about the trolley witch now?
Yes,
what is
we can
this?
Talk about it. So... basically, you know the trolley witch who walks down the...
Oh, and on the Hogwarts Express.
Pumpkin pasties, dude.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Do you want a pasty?
Yeah, that's it. That's
iconic.
That's literally all she does in the books. Iconic, great. So, in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child...
Truly iconic. I'm not joking.
No, neither am I. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, there's a scene where they try to get off the train.
Yes.
So Albus and Scorpius, who's Scorpius Malfoy, he's the son of Draco Malfoy.
Who has a crush on Rose Granger Weasley. Give me a fucking break.
Because of course it's got
to
be that.
They're trying to escape the train and meet with the Diggories.
No, they're trying. Yeah. So they're trying to leave the train. All of a sudden, the trolley witch is on top of the train. She's on top of the train. She's like, what's going on? And they're like, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing?
Yes.
So she's like, her hands turn into spikes.
Yes.
And she screams a bellow scream and says, no one leaves this train.
So you find out that the trolley witch is not really a person. She's more of like an entity and part of the train.
Yes.
She's like a magical element of the train.
Who's lived there for hundreds of years.
And she's never let anyone get off the train.
Which honestly, yes, queen.
Yes, queen, but yes, also girl. No, I hate.
Yes, you better work. You better keep those kids on the train. You better sell your
cakes. She becomes that fucking mutant in X2 with the nails.
She literally turns into Wolverine. Screams a horrifying scream. They get away from her, but then later on Hermione says, well, the trolley witch is just so embarrassed and so frustrated.
The trolley witch is
very upset. Other two biggest revelations of Cursed Child.
Also, she comes out and says she has no name.
Yes.
She's forgotten her name.
None of this is canon.
She's the trolley witch. Dismiss it.
Other two biggest revelations of Cursed Child, I will say, confirmation that Voldemort and Bellatrix fucked.
Wait, I did not know. I didn't get that.
A spoiler.
Oh my god, I need that.
Yes. So confirmation that Voldemort and Bellatrix did it, which thank God.
Yeah,
they both needed it.
I mean, come on. They both honestly, it probably was amazing.
They were probably flying around.
Honestly, it probably was amazing. Honestly, Elise is getting her fan fiction.
Yes.
There's probably some snake play
involved.
Yeah.
You know there was snake play. You know Nagini got into it.
Yes, Nagini was involved. All of the different objects were involved. Like
Horcruxes. Oh.
Yeah.
Bellatrix's like primal screams were probably absolutely horrifying, but sexy.
Yes. And then, what's the second revelation?
What's the next revelation?
That Moaning Myrtle's real full name is Myrtle Elizabeth.
Ariana Grande.
Oh my God. Myrtle Ariana Grande. No, it's Myrtle Elizabeth Warren.
Yes, I saw that. Oh my God, that's so funny.
Shut up. I love Myrtle Elizabeth Warren.
Myrtle? First of all, Warren? Yeah, I guess it's a British name. Myrtle Elizabeth Warren.
Oh my God, that's too good.
I feel like even if she knew...
Even if she knew.
Even if J.K. Rowling knew and named her that or didn't, I don't care. I love that so much.
There's another revelation in the book. Dobby's full name, Dobby Barbara Boxer. Just female senators.
And of course, Nagini Hillary Clinton.
Nagini Hillary Clinton.
Making the conservatives go wild.
Yes, they're eating it up. Oh, wow, that's so funny.
Well, can I just... So now that I've heard that confirmation that Bellatrix and Voldemort did fuck...
Yes.
I just want to ask, have you treated yourself to a trip to Universal Orlando to go to the Wizarding World? Elise, oh my God.
Elise, you must.
I know.
I've been five times.
I can't believe that.
Producer Joe just lost his mind. Yes, I've spent thousands of dollars on my trips there.
I've heard so much about it. I know that like you can buy the special wand and go to the little places and do a thing, but like... So all my Florida family is in Miami, and every time we go, I'm like, guys, can we please go to Orlando? And they're just like, my family won't go with me, so I have to go with friends. Like, I've kind of decided that this is the year. You must go.
We might go in early October.
We should go.
Just saying.
Please invite me, because I will come.
No, honestly, Elise, you should come. Also, like, I truly enjoy going with, and I think, so David Mazzoni and Bowen and I went to Orlando, and... it was a transcendent.
It was the most fun. I was managing my expectations a little bit. I was like, well, like, how much fun are we really going to have as adults going to, like, these theme parks that are, like, designed for kids? But, oh, my God, it was the funnest experience.
I'm a huge Disneyland freak, too.
Yeah.
I love, because when I was a little kid, I grew up in L.A., and my mom's best friend did the window displays for Main Street USA.
Wow, which are big. Amazing.
Yeah, and so she would get us free tickets all the time, and so we would go to Disneyland, and so I, like... when I was a little kid, I went to Disneyland all the time. So as far as theme parks go, like that is the type of theme park that I enjoy.
Immersive.
Like magical, immersive worlds.
And that's my whole love thing Wizarding too. World. And you will love Wizarding World. Here, I'm going to actually map out an itinerary for those of you who might want
to
go. Okay.
Here we go. Here we go.
Here's what you must do. You have to get a multi-day pass.
Yes.
Because it's the studios, Universal Studios Florida and Anza Adventure. You go to Diagon Alley like you would if you were a student. Mm-hmm. You go to Diagon Alley, you peruse the shops, you get your gig, you maybe go into Ollivander's.
You got it.
Perhaps be chosen by the wand attendant and have a moment.
I have a moment, honey.
So you go into Gringotts Bank, you do the ride of your life, the Gringotts ride, which features Helena and Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort and Bellatrix. They get up in your face. It's a roller coaster experience that's also 3D and also like an immersive ride. Get up in your face and it is very scary.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. It is so good. So basically it takes place, the ride, like in between books like 6 and 7 when they need to break into the vault.
Mm-hmm. It takes place, I think, during 7. When you're in the vault.
They're in the vault and like belt.
With the Hungarian horntail. There is a Hungarian horntail in the ride.
In the ride, there is a Hungarian
horntail. The blind dragon that's under. A blind abused dragon to be free.
Like, I'm talking about thrill ride, multiple launches. Like, so good.
Honestly,
so good.
I need to pause. That part in the book, incredible. The fact that she was able to write an action sequence like that, like they're breaking into Gringotts and like making it feel like high octane, high adrenaline. It's incredible. I'm like getting chills just thinking about it in the book.
Me reading it when I was that age, I was like, well, this is going to be
like when 7 takes off too. Because the beginning of 7 is like kind of a rough ride.
It's a downer.
Like it's very upsetting. Sad. When Ron goes away, it's like
Hermione's
so awful.
Hermione's in such a funk.
Dobby dies.
Also, PotterCon was this weekend, and there were a lot of amazing Silver Does. A couple beautiful.
That's cool.
Just like hot girls dressed as the Silver Doe, and they were awesome.
Patronus cosplay?
Yes.
Patronus cosplay.
There was one girl in like an all-white bodysuit, and she had wrapped Christmas lights around herself and then done like deer makeup. Good. And I was like, girl,
that you won.
You're so beautiful.
Also in Diagon Alley is the Weasley's shop.
Wizard Weasley's
amazing. And Bertie Bott's, which is and Florian's ice cream shop.
Florian,
so he gets kidnapped. Remember?
I know.
They kidnapped him.
Well, luckily there's some quote-unquote British people to man the store.
Great.
Because everyone's British, too, in Harry Potter world in Orlando.
Although, actually, I think they do hire a lot of people from the UK for Harry Potter world.
They do, especially when it first opened. Because I went when it first opened. The first time I went was Christmas when it first opened. So you can imagine. There was a 3-hour wait to get into the part of the theme park of Alan's Adventure that was Harry Potter World. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I, we just felt like better than everyone else.
Yeah.
And we were like, we feel as if we shouldn't have to wait on this line. So we literally walked past it. No one stopped us.
I've learned.
It was crazy.
You can do that. I did that at Cafe du Monde in New Orleans. Like that thing that like tourists wait on like such a long line to go.
Yeah.
Me and my group, we just passed the line and seated ourselves
in
the restaurant. And it worked perfectly.
I was like, I've given my life to this. I was like, these people are here because they're tourists and their family brought them here.
You
and
don't
like,
know that.
No, they didn't deserve it as much as me. I walked right in. I'm sorry.
The thing is, what would Harry do? Harry would cut. He would walk right in. He would walk in.
You know, and like I felt very, you know, Hermione.
He would polyjuice himself into sort of like a park attendant, and he would be in the park.
Sure.
What if someone had stopped me and I just went like, Imperio, and they were like, okay. They walk in. We're dealing with like a true crazy person. Can we please?
Oh my god.
Okay. So wait. Let me. Yes. So after you do Gringotts, the bank, the ride, which features also true goblins, like all over.
Yes.
Yes.
You get on the Hogwarts Express, which is a true train that takes you to the other theme park, mm-hmm. and you get off the train and then you're in Hogsmeade.
Oh, right, because it's Hogsmeade Village as well.
Yes. Yes. So there's a Diagon Alley and then there's the original Hogsmeade Village. So you walk through Hogsmeade Village, you turn the corner. There's like amazing Dueling Dragons roller coaster called Dragon Challenge. It's themed to the Triwizard Tournament. Mm-hmm. There's like Hagrid's house. It's like a little roller coaster that goes through it called Flight of the Hippogriff. It's like there's like a little hippogriff animatronic that's very, very cool, very cute. Mm-hmm. And then you round the corner and there's Hogwarts and it takes your breath away.
It takes your breath away.
It is shocking.
I have to go.
Throughout the whole park, they're of course pumping the music, which is just like
the best.
The John best. Williams score is just pumping through the whole thing.
My favorite part of the song is that's the best part of the song.
See, I love the more like epic versions of it. Which I really honestly, there's a moment where you're waiting online for the Hogwarts ride, which honestly, it's indescribable. Yes. I mean, you get on the line for the Hogwarts ride and you essentially walk through the grounds of Hogwarts and you walk through.
It's beautiful.
You see the Mirror
I'm
of
like
Erised.
Sweating.
You see.
It's amazing.
You see the scores of the houses.
You see the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom.
You walk through the Defense Against Arts classroom, which is amazing. You
recreated walk through to scale with the film. It's incredible.
Dumbledore's office. You walk through the herbology gardens. You literally walk through all of it, and then you walk through this part of the hallway where the four heads of houses are in portraits having conversations with each other. And it's just like so fascinating to be a fan of the books and like listen to them talk. It's just so cool. And it's really for us.
Yes. Yeah, that's awesome.
Then the last thing you see before you get on the ride, which is mind blowing, is the Sorting Hat basically like breaking reality and like telling you about safety. The Sorting Hat is don't put your arms and feet outside the car or you'll be
whatever
splurched or whatever Harry Potter
splurched,
word.
Yeah.
So basically then you get on it and it's this unbelievable, you do the ride. It's like 2.5 minutes long. Your feet touch the ground and you can't believe what you've been through.
That sounds so incredible.
I endorse.
At PotterCon, there was also a really good Mirror of Erised costume. She won the costume contest because she made the entire like structure of the mirror and it looked perfect. And then she was Ron Weasley holding the house cup with all of the medals
God.
And she would stand in it.
That's amazing.
So
that's
it incredible. Was like, it was unreal. Also, so I haven't been to Harry Potter World, but what I did do was the Warner Brothers studio tour mm-hmm, in England yes. when mm-hmm, I went. Mm-hmm. And it was just the greatest. So when you go in, they like show you this movie that's mm-hmm. like all about, they put you in this like movie theater and then they show you like all this behind the scenes stuff of the movie and it's narrated by like 13-year-old Emma and Daniel and
oh
Rupert, and they're like,
God.
We love being in the films, blah, blah, blah. And then the screen lifts up, and it's the doors to Hogwarts, and they open, and it's the full set for the Great Hall.
That's crazy.
And you walk in, and it's just, like, the most insane thing. And then the tour is, like, self-guided, so you're allowed to be in there for as long as you want, and they have all of the costumes, ton of the original sets. So Dumbledore's office is in there. They have the full Diagon Alley set. So you walk down and you see like Weasley's Wizard Weezes was like the big like guy picking his hat off. And like you can walk through the full Platform 9 3/4 set and get on the train. It's like,
wow.
I can't
and
believe
you, like,
I didn't go when I was there.
And you learn all these different things. Like, they showed all of Umbridge's costumes from the 5th movie, and they were like, as she gets more powerful, her outfits get pinker.
Pinker, yeah,
like,
I love
more
that.
Intensely pink. And I was like, oh, I didn't know any of that. They have the statue from the Ministry of Magic of, like, the wizards trampling on all the muggles, like the evil Voldemort statue and stuff. It was unreal.
Where is this? Scotland, Ireland?
It's in it's like in Britain. You have to like take a bus. It's like a bus from some train station that wasn't hard to get to.
When Henry and I were there, we saw advertisements for it. We only had a limited time, and I think it was sold out or something, or like it was really expensive, so we couldn't go. But I now am having such regrets because I really want to go.
It's so cool, and they have everything, and they also have like, interesting things, like a lot of like the cast and crew are in the portraits, and so they showed you like the portraits in the in Hogwarts, and then like which cast and crew member, which director of the movie it actually is, and stuff like that. So
I literally live.
I live. I live.
Talk about PotterCon, because what was it?
So so PotterCon, this girl Margaret Ann Kaminsky, who's great, I guess just started it as. It started as a get-together for her friends in a bar. And that's how it first started. And then it got bigger and bigger. And then last year, and I think the year before, it was at the Bell House. I got involved with it last year. She had contacted me because I've made it known to the world that I love Harry Potter and that I do comedy. So I got in touch with her. And that was like at the Bell House, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I love the Bell House. What a good venue!
It was
for
so
it.
Much fun. Yeah, but perfect. This year, it was at Irving Plaza, which is insane. Yeah. And it was 2 days at Irving Plaza. Yeah. I did the sorting ceremony on the first day, so I got to do the opening sorting, and it was very fun. And I brought Pat Wise, who's an only seen the movies person. Mm-hmm. And he was my Dumbledore.
So fuck him.
Yeah, it's well also. MuggleNet did a review, which was awesome, and my name's on MuggleNet.
Oh my
which
god!
Is like something that has never. Yeah, they plugged my Twitter on MuggleNet. It was fucking.
I
sweet.
Saw that they oh were like follow.
But they also were like Pat Wise, star of the evening, star of the day.
No, he's not worthy.
Furious.
They were like he played a very casual Dumbledore. It was hilarious.
So we ran this racket where like we only got one free drink, but the drinks at the Irving Plaza were like mad expensive.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, this is not going to fly. So we decided to tell the audience that anyone who brought drinks for us to the stage would get sorted immediately into whatever house they wanted. And so by the end, both Pat and I, the article suggests that only Pat did it, but we both did it. Both Pat and I were double fisting beers, which was awesome. We got a bunch of free drinks from it.
Love it.
I was supposed to have a second show in the evening. Literally went to the show, said, I'm too drunk to be here. Left the show. Couldn't do the show.
Thank you.
Had to go home.
Wow. Oh my God. I love it. I got that's too fucked up at PotterCon.
But at least you showed up and said, I can't do this.
I showed up. I walked in. I was like, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
I cannot work out these new characters right now.
Oh, my God. Wait, can I ask what the vibe was like? Okay, so they come up on stage.
Yes.
Walk us through it.
So the vibe is really good because it is a 21 and over event. So it's, like, very fun. I also think that in general, because the original Harry Potter, not this cursed child mess, but the original Harry Potter is so funny.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a huge part of the heart of the series that the Harry Potter fans are a very good humored bunch.
Good.
So it's like a very fun thing. The way the sorting ceremony works is that people all put their names into a goblet of fire, mm-hmm. and then I come up with it, and then there's another cauldron that has personality questions. And so I just pull names. It was literally an hour of me pulling names, bringing people up. We'd ask them the questions, I throw it to the audience to sort them, and Dumbledore makes the final call.
Which I'm sure was very fun for him.
Yes, Pat did. One dude brought him a beer, and Pat did not sort him into the house of his choice. Wow. And
oh, that's an honor.
And then, so he came up to the stage, and he did that, and then Pat sorted him into Hufflepuff.
Noted Slytherin, Pat Wise.
Yes,
noted
Slytherin. Very rude. And then I pulled the guy's name later, so he came back up on stage and was like, hey.
Redemption hour.
And it was very tense, but he did get to go to Gryffindor eventually, which is good.
What house do you think that you're in?
Gryffindor.
Okay.
I feel very strongly about it.
Yeah, I believe that you're a Gryffindor. What
I'd be either... I've been told I would be a Slytherin, but I feel like... And I think you can speak to this. I feel like a vast majority of people self-sort themselves into Ravenclaw.
Yes. I think it's what a lot of people do when they're like, I want to say that I'm in a cool house and that I'm smart, but I don't want to be as braggadocious as to say that I'm a Gryffindor.
Which is why they do that. So 100%.
Yes. So a lot of people say Ravenclaw. I think also like probably the crowd that we're hanging out with has like a an intellectually liberal vibe,
and they want to be Ravenclaws. What I always say about myself is I really feel like depending on what phase of my life you talk about, mm-hmm. like I would have been in different houses. Like when I was a kid, when I was 11 years old, you would have put me in Gryffindor for sure.
What about now?
In my early 20s, for sure Slytherin. Like, absolutely late teens, early 20s, Slytherin down. Right now in my life, I feel like I'm a Hufflepuff.
Explain
But I will die a Ravenclaw.
Okay, so interesting that you're like allowing yourself the flux to change houses. Why are you a Hufflepuff now?
Now, I feel like I'm a Hufflepuff because I'm very laissez-faire about the whole thing. Like,
I don't
really
think that means you're a Hufflepuff.
No, though. I think it does. I think because I'm embracing the fun and trying to be like kind and just really trying to be like in this new phase of my life, like just trying to be like, hey, you know, let's enjoy life.
Love it.
Like, I really don't feel like that lines up with any other house. And you know, we did this last week with Sam Taggart. We talked about Sex and the City,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about the Sex and the City ladies.
Yes.
And one of the reasons why I feel like I identify as a Carrie is because I strongly feel disconnected from the other three.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. I would say, like, if you were to break them, all four of them, down into traits, like, yeah, I feel like a Hufflepuff right now, which Henry, my boyfriend, gets mad when I call him a Hufflepuff, but he is.
He's a Hufflepuff.
And it's not a bad thing.
In the best way, yeah.
But Hufflepuff's thing is, like, unafraid of toil.
That is not Matt Rogers at all.
I'm afraid of toil? As I sip my cocktail.
During PotterCon, the first girl who got sorted into Hufflepuff said that she liked to watch Shameless, so we all decided that Shameless was another Hufflepuff.
Yes, they all love Shameless.
like unafraid of toil, great friend, Shameless.
Yes. they
love the show Shameless.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
But so, like, I don't know. I always think about Hufflepuffs as like the people from my high school who went to UVA. Like, they worked very hard and they got
Says UDels, Elise Morales,
University of Delaware,
where all the Gryffindors go.
That is true. Well, listen, University of Delaware is, it's you have to be brave to get through it.
Wow.
It's a huge school,
it's
right?
It's a big school.
Because I had several friends that went there and were our age.
It's a big little school because, you know, like, Delaware is a small state. So I feel like it's a state school, but for a small state.
Right,
so it's kind of
sure.
I think it's like 12,000 undergrads or something. Okay. So it's like sizable.
Right. It's that situation where I could throw out three names and, like, of course you wouldn't know them, but there's that chance you would know one.
Yeah.
Whereas,
so,
like, you know, with other things, it's not.
Yeah, I feel like Hufflepuffs work very hard and they're generally likable, but I guess Cedric Diggory.
You wouldn't fuck one.
It depends on what he looks like.
Cedric, I think we'd all fuck Cedric.
Yes. We'd all fuck Cedric.
I would ghost Cedric.
Before we move on, I think what Elise, I just want to point out something, underline something Elise mentioned, is that Harry Potter fans have a sense of humor because the books are funny. You would
Big
not
time.
Be able to do the same thing with Lord of the Rings fans because they would take it so seriously.
No, yeah, it's very serious. And I think probably like Game of Thrones
are
a
like,
little
well,
bit.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones has some humor because of like Tyrion and stuff.
And Hodor
but,
or whatever. Yeah.
Are you also a Lord of the Game of Thrones fan?
I've read the books and I watched the show, but it's not the same. Like,
no,
I'm
not
as into, like, I'm not like an encyclopedia for that stuff. But I think that Harry Potter has a very fun, light heart, and that like showed up in PotterCon. Like, everyone is there to have a really good time.
Good.
Yes.
People are drinking. They have funny costumes. Like, there were a lot of really, really amazing costumes. There was this one Voldemort there who had like full prosthetics. It was crazy.
Oh, wow.
But there was also like cute friends who came as Ron and Padma Patil. And like, he it was two gals and one was wearing like the shitty frilly robes that Ron had.
Uh-huh.
Like
they
she
ball.
Bought them online.
Yeah.
And then the other one had like an orange sari and they like went on and just like, they would walk around looking pissed off at each other. And you would like, they would kind of hold hands and then be like, and I was
they
like,
they did it
I
in
loved,
character.
I loved
oh my god,
it. I loved it.
You know, what's your favorite book?
Goblet of Fire.
Same,
Goblet of Fire.
Absolutely think it. When you look back on the series, like Goblet of Fire was the one. I think because like of how it starts and how it like just the procession of like, you know, you got the Yule Ball, you got the Triwizard Tournament,
uh-huh.
you have like them
yes.
in the thick of their like adolescence.
Yes.
And then it ends with the dark turn and the books are never
it's
the same.
It's perfectly paced because the first three books all led up to some big event at the end,
mm-hmm.
whereas Goblet of Fire had like three
forward
like, spaced
motion.
Out. It was like high energy events.
It straddles the Goblet of Fire is the book that like lives in the two worlds that exist in Harry Potter, yes, which are like the light, frivolous, like Dumbledore's password is lemon drops world of like the first three books.
And the upside down.
And then the like you need to confront death, Harry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the last. Like it lives in kind of both of those worlds. They're like silly, goofy things. Like the Rita Skeeter plotline, I think, is like very, there are so many fun subplots in Goblet of Fire. Rita Skeeter.
Yes.
And then like Harry loving Cho Chang starts then. Yes. That's when you get the first hint of Ron and Hermione, really. Yes.
It's true.
Which is very fun. And Hot Hermione.
Hot Hermione. I'll never forget. Yeah, Hot Hermione was a moment in time. Mm-hmm. I will never. Have we talked about this on this podcast before? Because I'm having deja vu right now.
About Hot Hermione?
About this moment of. So I will never forget a moment in my life that changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Was what? When I remember I was reading Goblet of Fire and I was sitting by the pool and I was like reading it. And I remember it was the moment when Harry and Cedric have decided to grab the cup together and it's a portkey and they get transported to the manor. And when Cedric was murdered by Voldemort,
kill this
that baby. Absolutely, I had to put the book down and I had to like, do several like laps around my yard. I was like, my life has changed.
Because that shit had not happened before.
No, it had never happened. And also, I think in my like short life at that time, like I had never like actually understood like kids die.
No.
Like I really, like that was a choice.
It also happens so fast.
Yeah.
It happens in like an instant. And
never forget the line. He was dead before he hit the ground.
Yeah.
Never forget the line. We'll never forget that.
And wow. Fred Weasley, the ghost of his last laugh still on his face when he died.
Whoa.
Oh my God, in the sevens?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's a big one.
The ghost of his last laugh still on his face.
Yeah.
That is really, wow.
Oh my God. The seventh book too is phenomenal.
Yeah, seven is.
She could have fucked that up for real and she like hit a home run.
The Battle of Hogwarts is one of the coolest things
and then,
ever.
Yeah. Oh, and then like, Harry meeting Dumbledore at King's Cross and like that
beautiful
like, oh so oh,
and
beautiful.
Like the gross like fetal Voldemort
that's
like dying
absolutely
oh,
horrible
boy.
And also I just feel like it's so rare as an artist like that you truly like especially at that level of commercial success for her like where you truly nail something
you follow
on every
through.
Level like she stuck the landing so
hard.
And so for her to be on her Twitter and say, gosh, I wish I hadn't put Hermione and Ron together.
So ridiculous.
I'm like, get
so ridiculous. Out of here. Because also, it's so much cooler that Harry and Hermione are just good friends. It's absolutely way cooler. I think that having a strong platonic male-female friendship at the heart of the story, like, is
huge.
Is
so
huge.
Exemplary. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you don't see that in books. It would have completely undercut all this stuff.
Yes.
Yes.
Like,
it would have made her, instead of her being Hermione, it would have made her Harry's Hermione.
Harry's girlfriend. Yeah. Exactly. And she stands on her own more when she's with Ron. And
absolutely.
You're not, like, yeah.
And also just like, you can't take Hermione's power away from her. That does take away everything. And also, if she had a regret, then come out and say that it's you put Hermione with anybody. Like, I just hated that. I just thought it was so disrespectful. And I was like, because we all were with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and then to hear how she would change other things about the books. Like, I can't really relate any specifics right now, but just, I don't want to hear how she would have rewritten it or how she would do it now. I don't.
JK's a little too like eager to like hit the keyboard and
she's,
be like,
ooh. I know. I think she's adrift a little bit with what to do with this thing. And newsflash, what she should do is write the Marauders prequel.
That's exactly what I've been thinking since the third book.
It's just like, well, I think she doesn't want to do it because it's precisely the thing that everyone wants her to do. But it's already
there.
And I said that shit on stage at PotterCon and it got like raucous applause. Like people want it. And it's like,
oh my god, Irving Plaza gave you like a huge applause break. That's crazy.
It, yeah. What, like, just because
pop
I was like,
moment.
We need to know. I was like, we need to know how Lillian, how did Lily start liking James? We like don't really get the answers to that. And then the other thing is like, Sirius is really hot, and like I would love to explore that.
Like, they were all hot. James Potter was hot. Sirius was hot. They were like the
and
fucking
Lupin
rat
was
pack.
Hot in like a cute little
Lupin
way.
Was
and
always
then
hot.
Pettigrew no.
No Pettigrew, no. That was my one thing. I was just like, why is Pettigrew friends with?
I know, and it's also like when your friend turns into a rat. When the animal that expresses his heart is that he's a rat, it's
red
like
flag.
Maybe we need, yeah, red flag. When his animagus is a rat, red flag.
Yeah,
red flag.
We
also,
gotta move forward.
My
yeah.
favorite part of the seventh book was exploring, was it seventh or sixth, exploring Snape and you finding out James is a total asshole.
Yes, and it's like, that James, it's so interesting because in the first books, there's so much James adoration. Like Harry's focus is so much on James and like knowing more about James, his father. Yeah. And towards the end, it really becomes so much more about Lily. And you like find out that Lily was like really the heart of everything. And that like she was the one who was like good and kind.
And she saved him. And
and that she saved him with her mother's love.
Oh, I absolutely loved that Snape backstory from the last
beautiful.
Book.
Princess Tale.
Really
one of the best
well
chapters
done.
Of any book ever.
It was truly well done. Oof. And that's like for me, it's like I haven't finished this. I will finish it. Curse of Child, but the thing is, like, I don't need this. You know what I mean? Like when she ended the last book with "and all was well," that was good for me.
Yeah,
you know
I actually
I mean?
Didn't want to continue further in Harry's life. I would like to know back more, or I do think it's interesting that she's doing Fantastic Beasts. I'm like interested to see what she's gonna do.
Yeah.
Have you guys read any of the like Pottermore stuff about like the other wizarding schools and stuff
in
like
America?
That? So there's the one in America, there's one in
the names
Africa.
Were crazy. The names
yeah,
were
Ilvermorny is the American one, and then the house names. Also said this at PotterCon, feels like a first draft.
Okay, run through these again. They're so bad.
Very
Wampus,
first thought.
Wampus, which is what I got. It's like some sort of large cat. Puckwudgie, which is like a tiny humanoid figure.
I got Puckwudgie.
Horned Serpent.
What the hell?
So
make
stupid.
A name Thunderbird. For a horned serp. Thunderbird.
And those are them.
This is
it's
what every
very bad.
This is what every kid like names the shit that they draw.
And it's what Cursed Child feels like. It feels like fan fiction.
I think that J.K. Rowling is also like a profoundly British woman. And if she's going to be writing about other people and other places, she needs some other hands on deck. Because so she was writing about the other schools. I think it's very cool. There are some problems. One,
oh, God.
Africa has one school.
Yeah.
And they
the
don't
whole continent.
And they don't use wands and they all learn to turn into animals.
Oh God. Give me a break.
Oh man.
So South America also has one school. It's in Brazil. All of Asia has one school. It's in Japan. So let's talk about how China has nowhere
to put all their wizards.
The Chinese have to learn Japanese.
First of all, the Japanese are not letting like Koreans and Chinese people come to their school.
Is this true?
No, I just extrapolation is that Japan's not doing that.
Right.
So like, but also Japan does have a cool backstory where like they get these robes at the start of their learning, and as they grow, the robes change color, like as they learn more about magic. And then if they like become a dark magic person, they're like a dark wizard, they turn white and it's like dishonor on your family, which is like, well, cool for you to bring in dishonor on your family.
Oh my God.
But she just needs, so let's like.
Where is this information? Pottermore?
On Pottermore. So there are three schools in Europe, Durmstrang, Beauxbatons, and Hogwarts. And then every other continent has one and Australia has none. And it's just a mess. And I'm like, girl, this is very cool. But like you need, she already got in trouble for like the way she talked. She did a whole series on magic in North America and like wove in a lot of like Native American things and did it in a way that Native American people didn't like. And I was like, you shouldn't have touched this. You should not have gone here with this, which like, obviously if she's going to write about magic in North America, it's good for her to include like Native American people, but maybe get some of those people on your team to research. Like help you.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I guess she like took this very like skinwalkers are like a sacred like yes. thing. Mm-hmm. And she was like, they're really just wizards. And people were like, no, they're not really just wizards.
I think she's an extraordinarily talented person.
Yes.
I think that there is a time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And like, I think, you know, she is in a place right now. She's certainly in a financial place where she can afford to say goodbye.
Yes.
I really don't think it's that she needs money. I think she's a creative person who wants to create more. And I truly think like she thinks that she's contributing as she puts more and more in the world. And also, I do think there's a lot of pressure on her from the industry to keep doing it, keep going. But the thing is, like, within what she set up, like I have no problem with Fantastic Beasts being a movie. I have no problem with that.
I think
like,
that's kind of fun. I think it's going to be cool that it's in the U.S. in the 20s and stuff. I think that's really fun. Like Eddie Redmayne.
It's awesome.
Love it.
I guess like don't fuck up what you've already perfected.
Yeah.
Because it's
that's
so,
what Cursed Child feels like.
Yeah. And honestly, I like there is an element, and I'll just say on here, like spoiler alert, maybe turn the volume down for the next 10, 15 seconds. There's an element of time travel, and I feel like it's going to be very Back to the Future where it's going to fuck some shit up.
It's,
And I'm not happy about it.
It's very like, it's very winky because now it's like you're going back to all these moments that people remember.
It's fan service.
Yeah.
It's fan service.
Yes. I mean, it reads kind of like a fan fiction, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like that it's like these characters, but they're not exactly right. And they're like doing things that, I don't know. I just don't think that Cursed Child is what people want.
No.
I don't think like actually, I think the story of Harry was done at the end of the seventh book. And it kind of like ruins it to have like these people and things coming back, like, you know, another potential spoiler or whatever, but there's Voldemort stuff in there. And I'm like, no, Voldemort's defeated.
Voldemort's done.
Voldemort's done.
He defeated Voldemort.
Is done.
He killed the people. Like, he sacrificed himself and died and came back to fucking life. And then, Neville killed the snake and Voldemort's done. Like,
and it's the same problem I have, really. And I did love The Force Awakens. I did like Star Wars a lot. Mm-hmm. But it's the same problem I have with that. It's like, the Republic has risen.
Yeah,
what are you talking about? How? Where did they come from? How? Wait, honestly, like, answer the question, like, where did they come from?
My biggest...
Because they were wiped out, and what, you know, I understand there's conflict again. Make it an entirely new conflict.
That was my thing, is I was like, get a new dark wizard in here.
Yep.
Like...
My thing with this is towards the end, and this is just from synopses, because I don't really feel like I care about this book enough to read it, or this play enough to read it, but there's some plot elements in the end that just feel very Deus Ex Machina-y. Like,
yes.
It's like, oh, well, all of a sudden, there's this thing that we didn't
of course
address before, and which the books never did. The books were self-contained and realized enough to like have everything make sense, and this just feels like it's pulling stuff out of its ass.
Because it's trying to be too epic.
And it's trying to cover so much ground time-wise. You go through, 4 years in this?
It's crazy. And there's so much of like characters coming up, like one example is like a scene at the very, very beginning where you meet Scorpius Malfoy and Rose Granger Weasley is like, you're the boy who everyone thinks is Voldemort's real son. This is your backstory and life. Yep. Goodbye.
It's horrible.
It's just like, it's very bad. It's not all of the things that are great about Harry Potter, like the law, like the development of things, whatever, is like completely undercut in this thing. And also like, she should have gotten that lady to do some of the illustrations or something.
Mary,
brought
Mary
some
Grand
of that
Prairie.
Back. Yes. But I know. I think expanding the world is cool. I think that if she want, well, my prediction is that, so we're doing this magic in North America thing with Fantastic Beasts, but Fantastic Beasts is kind of like, it's obviously going to be a franchise and it's a perfect franchise to travel all around the world.
Yep.
So I think she released this stuff about the other wizarding schools because Fantastic Beasts is going to take, it'll be a, like around the world wizard travel,
which is cool.
Journey.
Which is cool.
I'd like to
which
read.
Which is definitely cool.
I'd like to read an excerpt of some bad writing from The Cursed Child.
Okay, great.
So this is a scene where all the adult characters arrive at Professor Minerva McGonagall's headmistress. So Minerva McGonagall, who's now got to be 3,000 years old,
yes,
who's still living,
yes,
is headmistress of Harry Potter. No, headmistress of Hogwarts. She's headmistress of Hogwarts, and she all of a sudden she's in her office, and everyone arrives through flu powder. The chimney, and this exchange happens between Harry and Draco Malfoy. "Quite a surprise to see you, Draco. I thought you didn't believe in my dreams." Draco says, "I don't, but I do trust your luck. Harry Potter is always where the action is at, and I need my son back with me safe and sound. Ginny says, "Then let's go to the Forbidden Forest and find them both." End scene. It's just like such middle school play.
Yeah, it's like very...
Let's go here. Next scene.
It's so much of that. And also there's like a weird element of like Albus Severus knowing like everything that's ever happened in Harry's life as if he's read the books. And it's like, yo, like, yeah, I don't know about everything my parents have done.
Like
literally he's like, well, the second task was the one where they went into the water and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, why the fuck do you know that? Yeah. Like, who would know? Like, why would you, like, I don't know about like what, like my mom's cheer competitions or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Like, he just knows everything about Harry's life. And like, it's very blah.
And I feel like there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to hear that there's criticism of Cursed Child. There's those people that, it's like me when I watched like season 5 and 6 of Lost.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no, it's still good. It wasn't.
No.
And it's like, those people are going to be out there for this book. But here's what I would say to them. It's like, we have earned the right to criticize these books. I mean, because like I said, there's nothing better than the original, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in the original series, it was amazing. Like, this does not feel right.
No.
And we're allowed to say that it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, it's, you can tell it's not purely her,
right? Mm-hmm. Well, she didn't write it. She
just supervised the story, and you can tell because the characters are all wrong and it just lacks the spark of the original. My hope is that we'll see some of that in Fantastic Beasts. I have really liked the previews of Fantastic Beasts.
I think
they look fun.
I also think it's great that she herself wrote the screenplay.
Yes.
And I didn't know that was true.
That's cool. Yes.
I didn't know that they would have, like, Hollywood is so weird. I didn't know that they would have, like, trusted her, a novelist, to write a screenplay for it, but it looks like they did, and that's exciting for me because I do think she's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's going to be... I mean, I have really enjoyed... like all the little hints at it. I think that it's really fun. And I am excited to like learn about American Wizards and stuff like that. Like it takes place, like there's that scene where it shows like the seal for the Magical Congress of the United States, which is right here in New York City underneath the Woolworths building.
I love that.
The what building?
The Woolworths building.
Oh, okay.
It's Colin Farrell, Eddie Redmayne, and then is the rest of it kind of just like unknown?
New people. I think that part of it is that he's running around with a muggle. He actually has a muggle friend, which is one of the things that I did think was something that maybe could have been done in the original series, was have there one actual muggle who was like a good person.
Mm-hmm. Or that wasn't like a full idiot.
Yeah, that it wasn't just like the worst. I mean, I get you can't do everything, but like the only ones were the Dursleys, and it was just so bad. Even if Dudley was like okay, kind of had like an epiphany at the end.
Yes.
Because the Dementor showed him himself as he truly was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, honestly, that's what J.K. Rowling said afterwards.
Like, so our to wrap the Harry Potter conversation up, we do not necessarily endorse Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. However, you know what? Fans, go ahead and read it and, you know, make your own opinions
on it. Make your own.
There
are interesting revelations in it.
Yeah.
The biggest, of course, being Myrtle Elizabeth Warren. Which
of course. That's huge. Honestly, I have yet to get to the part where Bellatrix and Voldemort fuck. I mean, to that I say show, don't tell.
We don't see it staged, unfortunately.
Well, so then they're telling and not showing.
To that I say show, don't tell. If you need to walk the walk, honey.
Yes.
Listen, that's the book that she, that's the play that we need to see.
Honestly, give me an intimate two-person play, which is Bellatrix and Voldemort. Our producer Joe is shaking his head yes wildly. Yes. And give me The Fool for Love.
With Helena and Ralph Fiennes.
Give me A Fool for Love with Helena and Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort and Bellatrix Lestrange, and I give you my money, honey.
I love it.
I give it twice over.
We're at a segment in our show.
Okay, great.
Called I Don't Think So, Honey. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the touchstone of Las Culturistas. Okay. By the way, I should mention that we have, of course, been rocking our Culturista hat.
Yes.
And we feel very much like we are cruising down the river that is culture.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Rule number 87.
Seeing interesting beasts along the coast.
Rule number 87 of culture, cruise down the river, honey.
Rule number 87 of culture, cruise down the river.
We haven't come up with rules in a while.
We haven't. Well, that's rule number 87. Yeah. So that's we'll make a note of that. Yes. That we should remember our patterns.
We'll catalog it.
Improv people.
So I don't think so, honey. We're gonna rail against something in culture. Just
for 1 minute. You have 1 minute on the clock, Elise.
Okay.
And you're gonna select something in the culture. It can be anything. And you have 1 minute to to make a case about why it sucks. And you need to say the words, I don't think so, honey,
okay,
as much as you can to drive home the point, because you know what? That's really what this is about.
And just, we're gonna lead by example. You're going to see how this is done, Matt. I've gone first every single episode, so how about you go first this
time? So
you're
thinking that I should go first.
Because it sounds like you already have something.
Okay, well, I had something really good, and then
The Trolley Witch.
The Trolley Witch, but I feel like I've already railed against The Trolley Witch.
I'm not going first. I don't have anything.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Go with it, bitch. Ready?
All right. Yes, I got one. Ready?
And clock starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Not enough trailers for Beauty and the Beast, the movie. I have been waiting for too goddamn long to wait for a fucking trailer, which is mostly voices off screen. I haven't seen any of the anamorphic objects around the house talking. I want to know how it's going to look. I don't think so, honey. Me just hearing their voices. I don't think so, honey. One shot of gorgeous Emma Watson bending over to touch a rose. I don't think so, honey. I want to hear Emma Watson sing. I want to say, if this is a musical, stop being afraid of the music. My problem with Hollywood trailers that are about musicals, you're afraid of the music. Into the Woods, you were afraid of the music. You confused the viewing public. I don't think so, honey. It's a musical. It's Sondheim. You disrespect Sondheim? I don't think so, honey. You have to have a trailer packed of music. Beauty and the Beast, iconic musical. Don't be afraid of the music. Don't be afraid to show me imagery, glory, glamour. I want to see Emma Watson head to toe in a yellow gown. I don't think so, honey. Anything less. If you don't give me trailer, I don't give you life. I don't think so, honey.
1 minute. Wow.
Yay.
I'm sorry, but that was my best ever.
If you don't give me trailer, you don't give me life.
I just feel like it's coming out in March 2017, and like it, like
we've got nothing.
We've got
table
really
scraps.
Close to nothing. We've got table scraps, and I want more.
Yes, I agree with you.
I am ready for Emma Watson's next phase. I really am. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan. I think she's fucking brilliant.
Yes. We got a trailer. I know exactly what you're talking about, because you, me, and Sudi went to go see Bad Moms last week. They played a trailer. We got so excited, and then it was a fucking cop-out. Didn't see a face. Everything was disembodied.
We only saw her face.
Did you
for
know
a second.
That Emma Watson's last movie in the UK made only $69?
What?
$69.
It's not her fault. It's not her fault.
I'm going to fully say it's not her fault.
It's not her fault, but it did make
$69. Oh my God, that's perfect.
Well, I will say this.
$69!
What does that mean? Like six people saw it?
Yeah, like it's like very, very few.
Like the
people.
Net, like the gross.
And it's only like, that's only like 40 euro.
It's oh crazy. Yeah, I mean, well, after Brexit, it's 1,000 euro.
Yeah, that's true.
So what I just like, my thing is like, we were watching that trailer, and I was so excited because I was like, oh my God, it's Beauty and the Beast, because I had
watched
it once online.
You heard Cogsworth.
But I hadn't seen it on like the big screen, and it's when she bends down to touch the rose, and you see her like a beautiful face, and you're just like, oh my God, she's Belle. Now she was Hermione, like now she's Belle. Literally, I started applauding. Mm-hmm. I was that person in the movie theater that started
But didn't you want more, honey?
But I need more, and honestly, I waited too long. I love Beauty and the Beast.
You need more.
I love Beauty and the Beast. I think my favorite is Little Mermaid. Also need the live action Little Mermaid.
Oh, that'll
don't
happen.
Know how they'll
don't
do
worry.
It, but like need it. I love, love, love Beauty and the Beast.
Don't worry. You're going to get more come November when Moana comes out, that new Disney movie. You're going to get a full trailer. Bitch.
I'm sure. Yes. Also would love a live action Mulan. Would love.
That would be amazing. Aladdin. Yes.
Aladdin live action. Yeah. Also would love for them to revisit Pocahontas and maybe do it right. And get a live action Pocahontas, because I think that there's elements of Pocahontas that are incredible.
Some yes, I agree.
It's just
yes.
its historical interpretation is all
very
wrong.
Bad.
And I would love for them to do like a more adult, stark kind of realistic portrayal of what the life of Pocahontas was, with that kind of, you know, romantic type of cinematic feel. Yes. I would love to see what that is. I think it could be amazing.
I love it. Wow.
I do love that.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Because I'm down for the live action Disney stuff. I'm so down. Great. I also love musicals.
Yeah.
That's mine.
Okay. I guess I'll go and then Annalise can go.
So I'm going to put 1 minute on the clock for Bowen Yang. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. And 1 minute on the clock, go.
I Don't Think So, Honey. American waitstaff who make a huge fucking deal out of splitting the check. I was just in Montreal this weekend. Every single wait person was happy, more than eager to split the check for us and split dishes for people who shared and people who split. I Don't Think So, Honey. Waiters who are complacent, who are lazy, who don't want to put an effort to please and satisfy their customers, bitch. I Don't Think So, Honey. American service industry for encouraging this and propagating this in the culture of American service. I Don't Think So, Honey. Customers who feel bad about and don't feel empowered to demand this from their wait staff. I Don't Think So, Honey. Rude wait staff and slow wait staff. So this is equal opportunity. I Don't Think So, Honey. Canadian wait people, very slow, because you know what? They're too laid back and they're too nice and, you know, nothing's a rush. So I Don't Think So, Honey. Wait staff, Canadian and American. I can't speak to Mexican wait staff. I'm sure they're lovely. Maybe they balance it out for symmetry. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I Don't Think So, Honey. Wait people across North America, bitch. That's 1 minute.
That's 1 minute. Bon Yang, ever waited a table in your life?
No.
But well, then shut the fuck up.
Bitch, let me say something.
You better
something.
Shut the fuck up right now. I Don't Think So, Honey. Bowen
bitch, that, I am not in the... I am not... That's not my job. I've been... I know my first job was at Maggie Moo's at an ice cream shop.
Maggie Moo?
It was a really... It was like the poor man's Cold Stone. But I did my job fantastically.
Okay, Bowen. I'm just saying, it depends on how many cards you split it from. I'm a server. Mm-hmm. And if a party of eight is like, hey, can you split this eight ways... Sorry, bitch.
Girl, I didn't mean to make this a personal attack.
You attacked
on
me personally to here and now.
But listen, we were dining out six people every night, and we didn't even bring it up. The way people would just be like, should I split this? And we were like, if it's not a big deal. And they were like, no, not at all. I'm happy to.
I think it truly depends on the establishment.
But all of these establishments throughout Montreal were just more than eager to do it. Matt, I think we have a lot to learn from the Canadians.
I absolutely think that's true.
As a dual citizen, I can say this.
I also think, you know, you need to cut people some slack. I think that you are really aggressive. I think that Bowen Yang is a villain. And Bowen Yang is a restaurant villain.
Bitch, you cannot turn this around on me. That was my I Don't Think So, Honey. You do not undercut my I Don't Think So, Honey. Elise, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Anything all right. you want.
Okay. I am ready. Something. I'm doing a Harry Potter.
All right. Love I it. Love it. Love it. Stay
okay,
on the brand.
Because I do have something to say.
All right. Okay, she has something to say. And I can tell it's good. Because she's been sitting quietly, and I can tell she's been
waiting,
thinking.
I've been thinking.
She's
and
been
waiting,
thinking a
and
lot,
thinking
and she's ready
waiting.
To unleash right now. 1 minute o'clock, and go.
Okay, I Don't Think So, Honey. That fucking Pottermore waits Hufflepuff more than other houses to put people into Hufflepuff, because JK did not do the work of making Hufflepuff cool. And it's like, I Don't Think So, Honey, because listen, if you wanted there to be any cool redeeming people from Hufflepuff, that was on you to put it in the books. You made one person from there who was hot, yes, but boring, and he died. So it's like, I Don't Think So, Honey. I've been buying Gryffindor shit for years to have some fucking quiz online tell me that I'm in Hufflepuff because it's weighted some kind of way is ridiculous. Also, the sorting hat takes your choice into consideration. I know this, so I don't fucking think so, honey. I would tell that hat I'm transferring to Durmstrang. I would transfer schools. There are other schools that I can go to. I should be able to click no before my choice if the website is going to be accurate. So I don't think so, honey. I am not in Hufflepuff. I never would be in Hufflepuff. Goodbye.
What? That was incredible.
Honestly, we also now know how Elise really feels about Hufflepuff.
Which, because, you know, it's fair.
A badger?
No, I know. Badger. I know. Trust me, I know. There's so much wrong.
A diadem?
There's so much wrong. There's so much wrong. Yes. Like, why? Why make the fourth one? I mean, you could even call it the fourth one. Why make Hufflepuff so much worse and less appealing than everything else?
I mean, he could have had one friend from that house that was cool. Because, like, Luna held it down for Ravenclaw, I feel like, in 100%.
And also Cho.
Yes, also Cho. Cho, you know, she had her good and her bad, but, like, Harry wasn't friends with Cedric Diggory. He was, like, a character, but he was kind of, like, you kind of, like, didn't like him that much.
No. He immediately died in the same book.
Well, here's...
You met
he
him,
he was mentioned
really.
Throughout. He was mentioned throughout because he played Quidditch, right?
He played Quidditch,
he was
a
seeker, right?
Yes.
So, I feel like... He was mentioned throughout, and, like, sure. But then, like, he was developed in this way that was like, oh, but he was cool the whole time. And it was like, you're just throwing Hufflepuff a bone where you could have done this the whole time.
You really meet him in the third book. Harry falls off his broom with the Dementors in a game against Hufflepuff.
Yes.
And Cedric catches the snitch of that.
Because of that. Also, there are members of Gryffindor who belong on Hufflepuff, and I will say his name. I'll say first and last names. Mm-hmm. Colin Creevy.
Yes, what's going on with the Creevy brothers?
Was a Hufflepuff all the do-da-day?
Oh, my God.
He did fight in the Battle of Hogwarts and die.
Absolutely. Oh. So you know
rest
what?
In peace.
Maybe he was retroactively brave.
What? And Dean... I feel like
Dean
Thomas belongs in Hufflepuff, bitch.
I mean, the other one.
It would have been more
the one who, the Lavender.
Lavender
She's a Hufflepuff.
Brown.
Lavender
Get
Brown.
Out.
Lavender Brown was.
Name one other Hufflepuff besides Cedric. I can't think of one.
They're.
Hannah Abbott.
No,
who
the
marries
fuck is that?
Neville in the end, apparently.
Well, that's sweet.
She becomes the.
Neville, honestly, Hufflepuff until the end.
But until the end, but at the end, you find out. Well, no, because in the first one, he stands up to them and shows. That he's brave.
Yeah.
You're right.
He helps Harry with the task. He gets him the gillyweed. And then in the end, he kills a snake with the sword of Gryffindor, which he couldn't
pull
out of the hat.
It's just that all the whole time he had been like a punk ass up until the whole time.
Sure. What was I going to say? Fuck.
He wears an amazing... hooded sweater in the last movie. It's like he got badass, and also Neville got so fucking hot. How hot he got, and then like they put him in this really nice hoodie, and you can see that it's a hoodie when he runs away from the Dementors from the Death Eaters. And I remember being like, "Wow, nice hoodie."
That's a good hoodie. They all started to wear hoodies when they got older.
Hufflepuff's like professor representative was who?
Sprout.
Professor
which
Sprout.
Is even.
She's not even like
you could have made maybe the Hufflepuff teacher be cool. There is Tonks. It was in Hufflepuff, but you don't associate her with the house because you don't see her at Hogwarts. Really.
Who was Ravenclaw head of house?
Flitwick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Somebody told me it was Trelawney recently, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
If Trelawney was head of house for Hufflepuff, I guess that would have made sense. It would have been cooler than Sprout.
Also, they keep mentioning Sybil Trelawney and Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and I'm like, stop. Get out. Like, that's not the character we want, like, called back.
No. But that was one of the funniest characters that was ever in the book.
Yes, it was fantastic.
I mean, I also loved the fact that Hermione hated her so much. I was like, this is so funny, because she was such like a...
Dropped.
Yeah, that she was such like a like kook. She was like so crazy.
Yeah, Hermione was having none of that.
No, she was like, this is fake. And then they say in the book, I'll throw Harry Potter a Cursed Child one bow, and it's like, well, you know, Hermione Granger hates divination. Like the world over knows that Hermione Granger has denounced divination. And in her like room of banished books is like Sybil Trelawney's book, which I kind of
love. I love that.
Yeah.
Sybil Trelawney and Rita Skeeter were the two characters where I was like, you guys are stirring it up. You finna mix it up.
I love Rita Skeeter.
Is one of the best.
Comical.
Just like, that the first scene where she's introduced in the books, it's like a sketch. It's like it's so well written and timed. Oh,
and she
it.
Has the quick quotes quill.
Yeah.
And she keeps saying he's 12.
It's so funny. The books really are funny.
Yeah, the books
really
are amazing. And also, who played her in the movie?
Oh, whoever it was so
she was
good.
Perfect.
Oh, before should we just shout out before we go like the best movie performances? Because I feel like Rita Skeeter, Alan Rickman, obviously.
I mean, Alan Rickman, tale as old as time.
Dolores Umbridge,
Imelda Staunton.
Also, here's a little culture plug. Check out Imelda Staunton performing as Rose in Gypsy on the West End. Her performance of Rose's Turn is like one of the
best. Oh my God,
best.
I had no idea she played
Rose. She sings too. She's amazing. And it's so different than the way Patti LuPone and Bernadette Peters do it.
Oh my God.
But it's really good. Like it's acting first. she's an amazing singer. She's like, wow. She's incredible on the part.
Luna Lovegood, also Luna was amazing. Great. I forget her. It's like Amelia or something. I can't remember.
I
but,
do forget.
And she was not an actress. She was just a fan of the books who went in and did it.
I love it. Oh, good for her.
Locked it down.
I also, I mean, you have Emma Thompson as Sybil Trelawney. Like, giving it all the crazy she could possibly give it. And also, maybe the best performance in the whole series, I would say, personifying the role exactly how it should be.
Hagrid?
No. No, I would say Helena.
Bellatrix Lestrange. Helena nailed it.
Giving quintessential Helena an amazing part for her, just like killing it, and also finding out she was not the first choice for the part. The woman that plays Narcissa Malfoy was the first choice for that part.
For Sybil?
And she got pregnant and couldn't do it.
Oh my God.
Helena Bonham Carter was like, well, I'm available. And they were like, oh.
That's incredible. Okay. That's the perfect
Maggie Smith. But like, just like Maggie Smith, one of those actors that's like so good that you forget that they're acting.
Yeah.
Because then you see her on Downton and you're like, oh my God, so good.
Yeah, absolutely. She's incredible.
Well, hey, this has been a fantastic, magical episode of Las Culturistas.
What an amazing! I'm so happy we were able to hash this out. I'm so happy that like we're all on the same page about this.
Yeah, about this.
I do encourage you to read it, Bowen. The Cursed Child.
Yeah.
And also, you know, to everyone out there saying like, you know, well, I'm sure the effects are amazing to see on stage. Like, that's not what theater is, sweetie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's not what theater is. Theater is moments. Theater is giving you life. Theater is giving you energy. Theater is giving you conflict. Theater is giving you drama. Theater is not giving you lights and sounds.
Yeah.
And with that, I say goodbye.
Elise, thank you so much. Where can people find you on social media?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter and Snapchat at Fatlise. That's F-A-T-L-I-S-E. And on Instagram at Pandalise. That's P-A-N-D-A-L-I-S-E.
Which is truly a way, something that we've stolen from Important Shit That Doesn't Matter. Us plugging on the end. Where can we find you on social media? Important Shit That Doesn't Matter, a true influence on us. We thank Elise for being a pioneer of the podcast form. Thank you guys so much.
Bye.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit ForeverDogProductions.com.